Welcome. I'm Sarah Pollock.
And I'm Quinn Faison. And we're parent coaches at Plan P, where we believe in the power of practice.
As parents, we have been there through the teen years. And sometimes being there was a rough road. We learned the P was for many things, and always for practice, patience, and pause. From burping a baby to parenting emerging adult children, there is no right or wrong way. We're humans. We learn by doing.
The work that we do now as coaches has the full support and approval of our amazing children and our greatest teachers, Allie and Harrison. So if you're a parent, you've come to the right place. We're going to give you tools to practice clear communication with your children, which will improve your relationships.
We're excited to have you join us on this parenting path that passes through the adolescent years, where learning is in the pause and perfection is found in practicing. So let's get moving. Hello, and welcome back to Plan P, the podcast. We are so very, really honored and delighted to be here and grateful to you for being here and listening and joining us on the journey as it continues. What you got for today, Quinn?
So this week, I thought we'd talk about building resilience in our kids.
And I also wanted to put a pin in, I heard you say, how do we build resilience in our kids? And in that way that I often think, how do I build resilience in myself?
Right.
So just to sort of put a pin in that in this conversation.
Yeah, well, I was going to talk about that a little bit as well. But I wanted to point out that the teen years are a particularly good time to think about resilience. Because what resilience really is being able to move on after being disappointed or hurt or making a mistake or, you know, any of those things that can put us down.
Right. And as you say that, I know that resilience is a huge topic for parents of younger children, like in the earlier years, toddler, even kindergarten. It's like a lot of talk about it's really important to build resilience. And I like your point that these are the years where they're having different feelings and different emotions. And as their brain develops and as they become conscious of becoming adults, as they become aware of that, this opportunity to explore feelings, because it's not like you fall down off your bike and you get up.
Right.
Now it's you had this experience.
Right. Somebody bullied you or was
right.
Just mean, not necessarily bullying, or you're disappointed that something you wanted to have happen isn't going to happen.
And so one of the key pieces of resilience is building relationship with your kids where you listen and you know those things.
Right. Absolutely.
It's not as obvious as, oops, they fell down.
Right. And I'm here to hold them while they cry. Right. Now it's being able to hold the space for them to have their feelings. And I think that that's particularly hard these days when we live in a culture that wants everyone to be happy, happy all the time. And I think this era in particular, due to social media.
Right. The other thing that as you were talking, and I'm going back a minute or two, so hold on to that.
Okay.
This notion of feelings, I think, is mental health is getting more attention.
Yes.
And the other thing that happens a lot is if there is bullying, us parents and administrators at schools, and a lot of people have a lot of interest in making sure it's okay within a week.
Right.
So the bullying has impact possibly years later. I don't know. Do you remember ever being teased as a kid?
So I was teased a lot.
I just have to say, she just rolled her eyes and made all sorts of faces.
Because I was teased a lot because I did not fit in. So I was an easy target. And my mother told me sticks and stones may break your bones, but names will never hurt you. It's in order to
love your mom.
Get me to not take it personally, which actually helped me because I didn't take it so personally. But the interesting thing is one of my friends in school who was part of the group that teased me, or they didn't tease me, they excluded me, carried that way longer into our adulthood than I did. There's some studies that show that it's the bystander that also is affected or more affected.
Right. The person who allows the negative treatment of other people has the guilt and shame, and they carry that with them. This is that two cells come together and form a human. And so some people, when they are teased, may carry it with them. That may impact them for a long time, and others may not. And there is like literally no way of knowing which one you are or which one your child is.
Right.
And I think that the studies that you reference are really true, that it is universally accepted that if we treat people poorly, if we watch other people treat people poorly, that has impact. Now, how that manifests itself, whether that means I feel so bad about that, I'm going to keep doing it to deny it.
Right.
Or I'm going to hold that pain and guilt and shame that I did this thing to this other human being. Again, and it depends on who you hang out with. It's probably in part who the group is.
Right.
I think that in that group dynamics, in the particularly middle school and high school, there are people being excluded and desperate to get back in.
Yeah.
So a lot of kids, it's like, well, they shoved me out, but I got that. Those are my people. Yeah. I got to get back in there. And even though I know it's not a comfortable place for me, it's not the place that I feel safe any longer for obvious reasons. It is the place that is familiar. Mm. So I'm going to go back there because that's where I belong.
Right. And when you say that, I think about adult behaviors that continue because they are familiar rather than because they are actually healthy.
Right. So part of resilience is the ability to recognize you're having feelings. Our kids aren't resilient. Hello, pandemic. All of us are more resilient in some ways, and we're also more focused on the fear that they're not going to bounce back. And the more you focus on something,
the larger it gets. Yeah.
Yes. Literally, if you take a telescope or a magnifying glass, the bigger it gets. But if a person is the thing that's under the microscope, they feel like they are under a microscope. And it's hard to squirm away.
Yeah.
Some kids are really having trouble bouncing back, and maybe they were having trouble before too. School wasn't always easy. And then there was the pandemic. And I talked to someone the other day who was like, oh my God, the pandemic was the best thing that ever happened. They got to graduate from high school, a thing that they were just on the edge of maybe not doing.
Right.
So I know several people who said that their kids were like, this is great. We get to be with you and don't have to deal with the social stuff.
Right.
So the reality of that situation is now they're back. How are they feeling?
Right.
I remember when you told me 2 years ago what a great time it was, how much fun we were having as a family. And now you're back at school asking them.
Right.
What's it like to be back? Do you remember? Because there's been a lot of talk recently as we come up to this year anniversary of, oh my goodness, it shut down. Oh my goodness, this happened. Oh, this was the moment where they were like, yes, now we're going to go back to school and it's all going to be on Zoom. This is where now we're in that year anniversary of everyone sort of trying to bounce to somewhere new.
Right.
Be resilient in completely new circumstances.
Right. Pivot was the word.
So is it pivoting? Is it resilience? Are they cousins?
They probably are cousins, because pivoting was, okay, the circumstances have totally changed. You've got to change with them, which is resilience.
Right.
Yeah. So how do you cultivate resilience in yourself and in your kids? Some of the things that I came up with, and this goes back to something you said, what you focus on is what you see more of, right? So gratitude is a great way to sort of help build resilience, is making a practice of focusing on what to be grateful for. And I know we used that in the beginning of the pandemic when we were freaking out.
Yeah, we actually, I think, literally would sit down and name things.
Yeah. And since both of us have that practice, it was really easy for us to sit down and do it together.
Yes.
It's really, really helpful.
I find gratitude to be really, really helpful all the time. And sometimes when parents call me or text me saying, do you have a minute? And I'll call them and say, you know, I have literally 5 minutes, and I'll listen to a little of what they're focusing on and how scared they are or panicked. Panic is a word that's come up a lot in the last week. And, you know, we'll talk about it a few minutes. And then I'm like, you know, try some gratitude stuff. Just like look around the room you're in.
Right.
Say out loud, I am grateful. Sometimes the way to refocus the brain is by actually talking to yourself in a room. And here's a tip. You know, you can walk down the street talking to yourself now.
Right. People just
no
think
one
you're
will
on the
know.
Phone. Yeah, stick an earbud in and everybody just think that you're talking on the phone.
Absolutely happens to me all the time, because sometimes it helps me verbally say, oh, look at the sky. Because you know me, I look at the sky a lot.
Yeah.
Or, ooh, look at the many shades of green. The person walking by me on the dog path may not know I'm not talking to the dog or a person on the other end of my earbud. I wear earbuds all the time. So there's a tip. Go around talking gratitude just, you know, to whoever. You can pretend there's someone else. Oh, and so-and-so, you should see beautiful dahlias. So what I hear you say is it helps to pause and fill that pause with something other.
Yes.
And in my meditation practice, I have a voice in my head. You know, I am, I feel, I do. I speak those words within my head, and that helps, keeps me focused. And when I listen to all the apps, there's
a million apps.
When I listen to them, I still lose my, I lose the focus. They don't work for me.
Right.
They work for trillions of people.
Right.
So no shame. What, however you can meditate, great. But, you know, I am grateful for insert something.
Yeah. And anything, the little things to the big things.
Yeah.
And take the moment to recognize it. And you can do that with your child. Be in conversation since you can do this out loud. Look, isn't the sky beautiful today?
Ah, you can,
you know, you can help them refocus on things to be grateful for.
Oh, help them focus on gratitude. So say, what are you grateful? Ask your child.
A teenager, you can ask.
Yeah. So
think of a couple of things that you're grateful for today.
You're having a hard day. I hear you having a hard day. I think we've talked in this podcast and I've heard this, I don't know where, but the high-low thing.
Right.
High-low is basically saying, here's my reality today.
Right.
Actually, this had never occurred to me before, but maybe start with the low. End on a high note.
Right.
What was the low point today? What was the high point today?
Yeah. So low-high instead of high-low.
Yeah. And also you may start with low and you may just stay there through dinner.
And allowing them to have the space to really articulate or not articulate their feelings, but have their feelings and show them that you're not afraid of their feelings.
Having dinner together as a family, not a family meeting officially, but a family dinner where you have a routine of we're going to talk about the lows and the highs of our day. And you let them have their lows without
interrupting, fixing.
Right. Without trying to explain to them why they should feel better. This is an opportunity to just say, that sounds what it sounds to you. Oh, that sounds hard. That sounds painful. Even just, I hear you, and pausing.
Right. Anything that will give them the space to have whatever feelings they're having without you being so afraid of them that you are trying to make those feelings go away.
Which is resilienting for them. Resilienting, not being the word. But you are, what we are doing is not trusting them to come back from that.
Right. It gives them the muscle, it's not literal muscle, but the muscle memory of, oh yeah, I've felt bad and it passed.
Right. And also you can hear them. They had this hard experience, whether it's a test or somebody picked on them or somebody said something that made them feel bad, even if it wasn't necessarily picking on them, they were excluded, whatever it is, you can listen to it. Say that sounds hard. Let them have their feelings. Is there anything else you'd like to tell me? What's on your high for today?
Right.
Sort of shift through that. And if you don't try and fix it, then you can come back to it the next night or even three nights later.
Right.
How's that thing that you told me about? Because the more they have that opportunity to process.
Yes.
Through. That's what resilience is. It's not getting shot down and shooting back up.
No, because at least in my case, that's often about stuffing down whatever it is. I can skate over stuff. And that's not particularly helpful either because it tends to come back up later.
Yeah. And resilience is a day-to-day practice as well. For me, I feel myself getting bogged down. I talked to someone the other day who had texted me. And when I called back, she said, oh no, I was just mired in negativity. You didn't miss much. Because we've talked together and she knows that we dive into it. She's aware that she is diving into that pool.
Right.
Just reaching out to someone sometimes to say, do you have time? She was able to reset herself and be resilient.
Right.
Get herself out of the pool.
Right.
Find the stairs. Gratitude helps you do that. And also just remembering that we get through things. As adults, we've been through things.
Yes.
Our kids, we've been through things. Sometimes that feels dismissive to me when someone's like, well, you've been here before. It's like, I know I've been here before. I know I've had hard times before. This one feels different. I want to be able to explore that.
Right. Yeah. And that's another way of trying to fix it and get over it. I think we are so uncomfortable with other people's feeling bad that we try to move past it really quickly. And that's It's not helpful. And, you know, my sister who does grief work talks about taking the time a lot.
Well, it takes a lot of time to process things. The grief of transitions.
Yes.
Whether that is a child actually transitioning from one gender to another, or transitioning away from the home to school, or away from home somewhere else. These are all shifts. These are all changes, and grief becomes part of a lot of those.
Yeah. I mean, those are transitions. They're smaller transitions too. The end of a team at the end of a season.
So just asking, how's that feeling? Because a lot of times kids are fine.
Yeah.
The season's over. It's no biggie.
Tired of those guys anyway.
Right. And a lot of parents, we got to schedule play dates when they were little.
Yeah.
We got to decide who they were friends with. We do not get to do that anymore.
No.
And not, I am sure for myself, there were times where I was like, oh, thank God that kid is not liking them right now. Allie will tell you that there was that transition from elementary to middle school.
Oh, yeah.
Was so, they had their group of tight friends and they did everything together. I think they were like four or five of them. And they were in elementary school. I didn't pay that much attention. When they were looking at middle schools, because that was a transition in which they were part of that decision making, not fully part all of it, but they were like, I will go to a school, and they listed, felt like completely opposite of what they would be interested in.
Right.
If only I can be this little group who they now say didn't see them at all.
Right.
It didn't take that long for them to lose interest in those kids. And now when we talk about it and they talk about those kids weren't really nice to them. Allie went along with whatever because they wanted to belong.
Their wanting to fit in was more important than who they were fitting in with at that age.
Yes. Security. Feeling secure is a very hard thing. And the more you have an awareness and a security at home,
mm-hmm.
and I would like to say we did the best we could to give them a secure home. But those were also the years where their other parent and I were separating. So there was a huge insecurity in their life.
Right.
Instability.
Right.
And so they looked for stability even if they weren't seen in it.
The resiliency comes from having gone to a middle school without any of those kids and finding a new best friend.
Oh, goodness gracious.
They're still in touch with.
And also getting involved in new things, theater. So these are opportunities and we don't have to pressure them.
But we can also support them without protecting them. I mean, I think what we tend to do in this particular point of time is overprotect rather than underprotect, because getting it right is often hard to do. So we tend to err on the side of too much protection.
And too much, I just had this wave of too much pressure.
And too much pressure, right.
The wave was how much I was focusing on Harrison's struggles and not as much their strengths.
Right. And resiliency would be focusing on their strengths and helping them see that there's a way through the struggle.
Right. And letting them enjoy their strength.
Right.
Like Harrison is a very good visual artist.
He is.
So back when Harrison was starting to look at high schools, and we looked at maybe one or I remember looking at one public high school and the rest private, because we were nervous that Harrison wouldn't do well in a public environment, which wasn't seeing all of Harrison. When Harrison said, well, I want to apply to SOTA, which is a school of the arts that their older sibling had gone to.
Right.
I remember almost dismissing, basically, and a lot of it was my concern. And also, it was like 3 days before every application was due.
Right.
So it was like, you can't do that now. You have to have a whole portfolio. I don't even remember whether I mentioned a whole portfolio, because if I had mentioned portfolio, I would put it at a full 60% that Harrison would have gone home and pulled together some art and gone to school and grabbed art and drawn who knows what and put together a portfolio and maybe even gotten into that school. My fear was taking over, my concern, but if I can live and learn, I can learn that I react to my fear. Like, oh, I don't know, most humans. My fear was so primed right then.
Right.
During that time of applying to middle school, high school, college, you name it. The parents, we go through it.
Right, because we're afraid that it's going to affect their entire lives, which it doesn't necessarily open all the doors or close all the doors if you don't do it exactly the way we think it should happen.
Right.
I have this conversation that it doesn't really matter what college they go to. What matters is it a college where they will feel comfortable? Because most of us are not going to get get into Yale and Princeton and Harvard, right? We're going to get into very good schools that don't have immediate cachet. But we could learn a lot if we're in an environment where we're comfortable and can learn.
Yes.
And that's the point.
Yes. My father, the college professor, said there are thousands of good colleges in this country. And if you get into those Ivies and you don't want to be there, they're not going to be good.
Right. Well, and I know people who went to those Ivy leagues and didn't have good experiences because A, there's a lot of pressure, and B, they were used to being the smartest kid in the room, and then they suddenly were middle of the pack, and that was also a difficult thing.
Right.
So there's lots to think about, and really, I think, as someone who had learning disabilities and thrived at my high school, but not necessarily my college, that being in an environment where you can be comfortable enough to ask for the help that you need to play to your strengths.
As you say that, the other thing that a lot of parents want to make sure that there is the right support. And here's an opportunity for resilience. You've selected a school that has support services. What do you think?
Yeah.
How do you feel? Would you like to use those? Because there was this one parent who, you know, they're going to the school with the reason we picked this school, eyebrow raised, but they worked together with their child to find a school that worked. One of the things was they had a whole learning center and lots of active support for learning differences. And the kid is now resisting making use of any of that.
Yeah.
And the parent is scared that they won't succeed if they don't use that. And so we talked about, well, they know it's there, right? If they think that you feel really strongly that they're going to fail if they don't use it, how likely are they to come to you if they start feeling like they need it?
Right. Or if they start failing.
Right. So in that, allowing them the natural consequences of their choices sometimes.
Allowing them to make the mistake of not getting help from the support center until after they've failed the class rather than before.
We don't know. I think that's the important thing to remember is we don't know what they want. And I think what's scary for them sometimes is they don't know what they want either.
Yeah, well, they haven't had enough experience in life to necessarily know what's available to them and where their strengths are yet. That experience comes from trying different things and having them not be good fits as much as it comes from trying things and having them work out.
Well, that's really good for me to hear. There's one parent who keep asking their child, a child who's not in college right now, but what do you want? And the mother said to me, the problem is she doesn't know. What's happening is their child feels pressure to know.
Right.
What you just explained, she can't know.
Right.
So what other question can she be asked?
Yeah.
Not what do you want, but
what do you like? What do you want to try?
What would you like to try?
Yeah.
Because trying...
We live in a culture that no longer has hobbies. Right? So we don't try to do things that we're not necessarily going to be good at. Like there's this whole focus to be good at what we're doing rather than fiddling on a piano or drawing. I mean, I now draw, but for fun. I'm not that good at it, but every once in a while I get it really nicely and I'm very proud of myself.
Well, and it reminds me of one of the many acronyms that I made up that didn't exactly work, but always do another positive try. It's not about doing the thing. It's about trying. And resilience is about adapting.
So. And as a parent, it's about giving them the space to adapt instead of trying to force a particular solution, but to let them come to their solutions on their own.
Right, because there are lots of people who are very good at that and they're very high up in many different organizations. They try it this way, they try it that way. Tell them about Post-its.
The story of how Post-its came to be was that the person at 3M who invented the Post-it was looking for a super glue, like the strongest glue ever. And came up with one that glued and re-glued rather than one that really adhered.
So it all worked out because somebody tried one thing, found something else. The other thing about that story is that 3M had given them a day to just...
Yeah, they don't do a day. Okay. They do 10%. Okay. So 10% of your time, I think it was 10%, and this is
old like 30 years ago.
10% of your time was spent on things that you found interesting, not necessarily that were directed by the company to be done.
How could we take that and apply to families today? How would we give the kids 10%?
It's about creating space. People talk about daydreaming being really important.
Mm.
And there's a book called Laziness Does Not Exist, which talks about the need to have downtime. We can't be going all the time. We're not built that way. So giving them the time and space to...
Not judge their downtime. Yep. Laziness doesn't exist.
Right.
So wasting your time is not wasting your time.
Exactly. So this week, the practice is making space space for your child. So how do you do that? It's about trying to have that high-low conversation.
So practice the high-low or the low-high. Building in a practice as someone who did this enough that our kids remember it.
Yes.
But we didn't do it regularly. We did it regularly in spates. And sometimes we still do it.
Yeah.
So don't set yourself up for, I have to do this.
No, but try to find opportunities to just ask them how they're feeling about something.
Right. And I do think that having a family dinner and doing a low high
is an easy way to do it and a good way to build that into the family culture.
The other thing that it does, it means that one person isn't dominating.
Mm.
I mentioned this to a parent once, and she essentially said that there was one person in that household who did almost all the talking at the dinner table, and other people got to say a word or two, and then that person would sort of take the conversation back.
Yeah.
Further plugs for low high.
Tuning in to Plan P. We hope you enjoyed this episode and gained some valuable takeaways that you can practice this week. And remember, change takes time.
To stay connected with us and ensure you never miss an episode, make sure to subscribe and share our podcast with your friends, family, and other parents who could benefit from these discussions. Also, please be sure to leave us a review on Apple or Spotify, because that will help us reach more amazing parents like you.
If you want to talk to us one-on-one or learn other ways in which we support families, visit our website at planp.us. You can also keep up with Plan P on Instagram and TikTok at planpis4.
We will meet you back here next week.